In last week's meeting of the EdTech Club, we discussed open educational resources, OER, with two local experts, experts at their school district level who have been practicing creating and using these kinds of open educational resources to supplement traditional curriculum and traditional textbooks. Well, there's more to the story than just that. And this week, we're talking to Christina Ishmael of New America and getting a national picture of OER. We're diving back in. We're giving you more information, more thoughtful discussion, and more tools and resources for OER. That's all coming up, and it all starts right now. Hey everybody, welcome back to the EdTech Club, and if you're here being a part of this discussion, you're a part of the club, so thanks for joining us. I'm Andrew Rausch. So, this week we're getting back into OER, because really there is a world of possibilities, and to look at this broad landscape, we're talking with...
I'm Christina Ishmael. I am the Senior Project Manager for the Teaching, Learning, and Tech team as part of the Education Policy Program at New America in Washington, D.C. So my particular portfolio focuses on open educational resources and supporting school districts as well as state departments of education across the country as they shift away from traditional instructional materials like textbooks to the use of different types of resources, and in particular, openly licensed resources, which allows for the customization of these resources without having to worry about copyright.
Now, that description of who she is and what she does is thoughtful, but in short, she has a nationwide view of OER implementation. Still, it's a complicated nonprofit job to explain, so I asked her how she explains her role to family members at the holidays. For example, her grandmother, and she actually said she'd talked to her grandmother about her work very recently.
So we talked a lot about our own K-12 experiences, and that is a common denominator for many folks across the country, is that everyone has a K-12 experience, or pre-K-12 for that matter. And we all traditionally think of textbooks when we think of the instructional materials that are in our hands or were in our hands as students. But it's 2019 and things have changed quite significantly. So it's really looking at what is relevant to our students today, especially given the student demographics and how much they have changed, and recognizing that a lot of the traditional materials are pretty myopic and Eurocentric and don't represent multiple perspectives. And so how can we customize the resources that are openly licensed to make that more relevant and engaging and timely, as well as equitable for all of our students?
So if traditional curriculum needs supplementation, why don't publishers just fill in those gaps? Why do we need OER? That was the next question I put to Christina.
So when I was at the U.S. Department of Education, we always invited the big four publishers to be a part of the project Go Open, which was all about supporting school districts as they moved to OER. And so they were still part of the conversations. They wanted to know what was happening nationally. There have been some that have actually made changes to their practice to incorporate OER into their platforms to give more resources for supplemental purposes and things like that. But it is still it's a business. And so there are certain ways of doing their business that seem to work for them. And so I don't think they're necessarily open to as many changes as we would like. And then, of course, when we start talking to district leaders and teachers for that matter, we know that, and this is even from my own experience in the classroom, we know that so many people supplement the resources that we do have in our classrooms. And so how do we build that out with the support of a district team that's working on this so that it's not just the responsibility of one specific teacher to supplement what they currently have in their classroom? And so there's a way to think about building capacity within a school district where a team is approaching this, and that they have everyone from the classroom level to specialists like English language learner specialists or special education, gifted and talented, and then you have district level folks that are kind of part of this as curriculum specialists and school librarians, crossing my fingers that school librarians are part of this as well. And so that everyone can contribute to something like this, I think it's it's a greater professional development opportunity for a lot of folks.
So my next question is about this supplementation aspect of OER. If educators are going to naturally supplement their curricula, then why do we coordinate it in this way through formal OER structures, through communication between districts? The question then is this purely to vet things?
That is one of the ideas. Yeah, absolutely. And if we are continuing to supplement, we want to find those quality resources. In a lot of conversations now with district leaders, it's asking the bigger questions of what do you want teaching and learning to look like? And then what role do those materials play in that? And so we're really thinking about shifting practice and so that it's not your traditional teacher-centered classroom anymore, but that it's really learner-centered. And so providing options for students as far as, you know, asking a big essential question and providing multiple pathways for them to be able to help answer that question. You're going to need a variety of resources. It's not simply open up the textbook and let's read about this specific part of our history. It is, let's look at it from all angles and from different lenses and different perspectives.
So, of course, I asked Christina where she'd suggest educators look for these vetted, thoughtful, free resources.
So there are several folks kind of in this field that have defined it. This is not U.S.-centric by any means because UNESCO has their own definition of open educational resources. The Hewlett Foundation, who helps support all of my work in particular, they also have their own definition. The one that I refer to the most is from the National EdTech Plan, which comes from the U.S. Department of Education's Office of EdTech. And they are teaching, learning, and research resources that exist in the public domain. That means that they don't have any sort of copyright attached to them, or they have a license that allows for free use, reuse, modification, and sharing with others. And so I think the more that we talk about the definition, we label it, and we like talk about what type of resources these are, that helps us understand what kind of resources these are. And it is different than just free resources. Because there is still technically a copyright attached to free resources. And so I can't necessarily customize a free resource unless I get permission to do that. And so having more of these conversations, building awareness, that's the majority of my job. And I think also starting to work with our pre-service programs in colleges of education and saying, hey, are you having the conversation around copyright and Creative Commons and, you know, what does that look like when people are trying to curate resources, whether it's for supplemental or full, you know, substitution purposes? We need to know that information so that we're not ethically or, you know, like actual legally, infringing copyright. And so that's really important. But it varies as far as how we use it. If it's just going to be supplemental, great. If it's going to be for that full replacement or we're building a full course out of OER, we have to know all of these pieces too. The first 3-4 months in my position at New America, I reached out to many of the districts with whom I had worked for the year before and asked, where are you finding these resources? And so I have a curated list on our New America project site, Pre-K-12 OER in Practice, and it is by no means definitive or exhaustive by no means. But it is a place to point people to get started. And so it ranges as far as you have full openly licensed curriculum that exists. So if I wanted to take something off the shelf and use it today or tomorrow in my classroom, I have that as an option. There are K-5 ELA resources. There are 6-8 math resources. There are 9-12, you know, science resources. And I can take those and use those right now. But then there are also learning objects. And so then you think more granular, the lesson plans, the activities where you create something out of those individual resources. And like you said, we do this already as teachers, and being able to pull that all together, it also matters.
In our discussion in last week's meeting with Tim Holt and Heather Goodenough, we talked about the growth in OER over the past decade or so. But I was curious to know if OER is a modern idea or an old one. So I put the question to Christina.
I think that it's always existed within silos, especially in education without access to openly share, without the infrastructure of the internet. Whether that is my next door second grade teacher that we shared resources and, you know, vice versa or whatever. But now we can scale that much larger because we do have internet access. So I think it has certainly catalyzed a lot of the work that's been happening in higher education around OER and then started to trickle down into pre-K-12. And then with Go Open, that really helped launch more efforts in pre-K-12. And then folks in the community have just been contributing the resources that they have curated or created. And so it's generated more resources to find, to search and discover, and then to be able to implement in schools.
Christina also specifically mentioned the Go Open movement, so I asked her to elaborate.
Yeah, so Go Open is a project out of the Office of Ed Tech, and it is, if a school district is interested in OER, they commit to becoming a launch district, which is to replace one textbook in one grade level and in one content area within a year. They join a community of practice of other districts that are doing this. They're typically matched up with an ambassador district that have been doing this for a while and can provide that mentorship or some, you know, best practices or examples or whatever that may look like. And so you can still sign up to become a Go Open district if you're interested in that.
So I could say this textbook is not meeting all my needs, but I wouldn't know where to start in terms of building out a new curriculum by myself. So this gives them kind of the support, the guidance, a path, and kind of bite-size developments.
So it certainly puts them within that community of folks that are doing the work. When I was there, we put out a publication called the Go Open District Launch Packet, which took best practices of those ambassador districts and put it into kind of five phases that we were typically seeing. And so how do you get started in this work? Where do you see it? You know, putting together a team that would be interested in doing this, talking about the infrastructure, talking about professional development, quality control, all of those pieces. And so there is an actual publication, 40 pages, it's an easy read, for folks that are interested in this.
I also asked about the general benefit of OER. We've talked about how it works a little bit, but I wanted to get a sense of the big ideas behind this, from cost savings, from moving resources around, to curriculum improvement, to theories of education. In short, why should you try OER?
It's hard to separate myself from those things because I've been doing this work for 3 years now at the national level. And so it's like, we can get into the philosophical parts of it and we believe that, you know, every child deserves equitable access to education. And then therefore we think that they should have equitable access to instructional materials that are free from bias and everything else. I think when it comes down to it, it's having these conversations again to build awareness that this is even an option, because we're so entrenched in the tradition of we buy textbooks. It's a cycle. So this year it's math, next year it's English language arts, next year it's science. Like, there are other options. And so even being aware that there are other options, it's particularly difficult in states like Texas because there is a state list and there are other states that do this as well, where OER is not considered. And so then folks don't necessarily look outside of what is listed. And so I don't know. So we can talk about the nuts and bolts as far as the actual resources, but then we also get into the greater discussion of what do we really want out of teaching and learning again? And do we want kids and students to be co-creators with us? Do we believe in open education where they're learning alongside us as adult learners? It varies. And this is something that we also find in pockets within the higher ed open education community. There are folks that really believe in open pedagogy, where they are having students that are co-creating. We have folks that just believe in the textbook kind of substitute, and it's just about the resources. And then anyone and everyone kind of on that spectrum. So I'm seeing more of it actually changing practice in schools, but we're just on the verge of that. It's very nascent at this point. So it kind of depends on your funding structure. I just learned from some school districts here that there are some limitations as far as state appropriated money that can be used for instructional materials, but not necessarily compensating teachers. For them to come together and curate or put these things together. So that makes it more difficult. And so then that requires an extra level, I would say, of kind of advocacy on the part of TCEA and other folks that help support this kind of work to change actual language, you know, in statutes or whatever that may look like, so that can actually happen. I don't know. It's interesting to see how this plays out in other states as well. And so that you can see, instead of simply writing a check to one big publishing company, that we can reinvest that money back in the school district. I made the statement up on stage this morning during the panel that OER is free like a puppy, not free like a beer, or free like anything else that might be considered free, because you have to consider all of the things that you will have to do in place of writing the one solid check. And that is something that we didn't necessarily consider, I think, when we first got started in this work. We're like, no, these resources are free, it's great. But then you have to think about all of the time and the money that has to be used in order to bring these things together too, so that they're comprehensive, that they're scoped and sequenced, so that they know that there's some level of quality. And that does require compensating teachers. And I will always tell a district leader, you will compensate teachers for their time, energy, and effort. Like, this is not an expectation that they're also writing their curriculum. Now, some folks already do that, but we also need to make sure that at a district level, we're supporting the teachers that are doing this. And so there's never an expectation that they're doing it for free. And that varies as far as how school districts are able to approach that, whether they work through their union and, you know, they kind of allocate a certain amount of money or a stipend that's involved, like whether it's a coaching stipend or something similar to that, or if it's per course or per unit they pay them, whatever. But that is how you can potentially reinvest that money that would be spent.
As my father likes to say, the cost of getting something is not just getting it, it's maintaining it. So I talked to Christina a little bit about what it takes to maintain an OER project.
Well, and I know that we have resources in Texas in particular, like through the ESCs, to help support this through professional development. Nationally, we have the same kind of service agencies in most states that can help provide professional development and professional learning for this type of work. So that certainly helps. But nationally, we're trying to work on providing more opportunities for that, because that's really important to me in particular. And right now it's just me. And so building up that capacity, like a lot of the districts were saying, well, we don't have the capacity to do that. And I was like, yeah, I understand. I feel ya. So it is that maintenance, but it also requires a mind shift too around how we look at instructional materials. So if we were on that traditional cycle of we bought it this year, we don't look at it again for 6, 7, 8 years or whenever funds are available, this is different, because if we're putting together links to various resources, we're going to have to check those links often and make sure that they are still working. And so it becomes a much more iterative process where we're reevaluating the resources that we're using, whether it's per semester or yearly or whatever that looks like. It becomes a different process in all of this too. Our shifting student population, and I would say that's another thing that I'm really passionate about, especially the work that my colleague Sabia Prescott has been doing, is thinking about how we can make these resources more inclusive of our student populations. And so she just put out a paper last week around LGBTQ students and how do we support them through professional learning, how can OER be leveraged in all of this, and I would say the same for our students of color, students from marginalized communities, and making sure that they're represented, because they're not currently in most instructional materials. And so how do we make sure that they are, and it's a welcoming school space, and that they feel that they're relevant in their own classrooms. And so that's something that is, Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop talks about windows, mirrors, and sliding doors. And are students seeing themselves in the mirrors? Are they seeing the perspectives of others? And then can they step in the shoes of others as well? And I think that's really important when we're looking at these materials.
Well, folks, that is it for this meeting of the EdTech Club. I know, I can see you all glued to your seats, ready for more. But until then, there is a little homework. I want you to go into the show notes at tceea.org/EdTechClub or in your podcast player. There you will find all sorts of useful links to the things Christina talked about, to other OER resources. If you're curious about getting started, if you really want to start digging through, go ahead and check out the show notes. Of course, don't forget to rate and review this show in Apple Podcasts or in your podcast player, of course, and you can connect with TCEA on your favorite social media applications. There is a lot going on Facebook and Twitter these days, so go check it out. In addition, if you want to earn a little extra credit, send your thoughts, reflections, questions, and ideas about OER to podcast@tceea.org. We'll work on answering your questions or responding to your thoughts or sharing them with the world. So go ahead and drop us a line. Well, that's just about it for this meeting of the EdTech Club, but worry not, we will be back. So until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.